The following material was recorded for the national radio series Focus on the Family, featuring psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson. This cassette contains a recorded presentation by author and speaker Mr. Gary Smalley. He spoke before a large assembly of men at the 1992 Promise Keepers Rally held in Boulder, Colorado. In this dynamic presentation featured over 2 days on our broadcast, Gary shared how men can be more effective in their relationships, both at work and with their families. Before we begin, we'd like to let you know that some of this material may not be suitable for young children. With that, here's Dr. Dobson as he addressed Focus on the Family co-host, Mike Trout.
Mike, we've been involved in so many things here at the end of the summer, the start of the school year, and we've had so many guests that we've had scheduled and everything. We're really late in coming before our audience, our listeners out there, and telling them what happened there in Boulder, Colorado on July 24th and 25th. We had advertised it. We had talked about Promise Keepers and what it was going to be like. We had Coach McCartney and Gary Smalley and others here in the studio, and there was a lot of enthusiasm for that event, but we haven't yet reported on it. And I want to tell you, I am excited about what took place there. 22,000 men gathered there in the rain. It rained both nights.
Oh, well, I remember.
And the guys were sitting there with umbrellas. They did a wave with umbrellas, I understand.
Yes, some had umbrellas. Then there were a few, like myself.
Sat there and shivered.
Who squeezed in under somebody else's.
You know, it was a time of closeness and togetherness for 22,000 men, though, I understand. Shirley and I spent some time in Scotland during the summer, and we had just gotten home, and I got hit with 1,000 things that needed to be done, was in jet lag, and I did not get to be there. I really regret that. Mm-hmm. I hope next summer that I can go and can be part of it, because everybody came home raving about what took place there in Boulder. You were there. Describe it.
Well, it was unlike anything I've ever been to before. I don't think I've ever seen that many men gathered to listen to speakers and to worship the Lord and to reprioritize their lives.
And to talk about the family. You
exactly.
Usually find a large number of women at a conference like that, and the men leave skid marks all the way into the auditorium or the stadium. But I understand there was a special atmosphere there, that the guys were cheering, and there was just such a spirit of togetherness, which is what the men's movement is all about.
It was a little like being a kid again, because you felt like you could set yourself free and cheer with 22,000 other guys and be excited about what was happening in your own life and in everybody else's life. And then there was a tremendous time of worship and a sense of togetherness from that perspective as well.
Guys drove from all over the United States and down from Canada,
yes.
I understand. Some came several thousand miles to be there. They came in campers. They camped out. Some of them were in local hotels, which were all full. It's my understanding that this idea began in 1990, and they had 71 men that participated. In 1991, they had 4,200. In 1992, there were 22,000, as we said. Next summer, we're going to fill that stadium there in Boulder, and they're already laying plans for that.
Well, I think actually the 22,000 number is a little small, because that stadium was big. I think it holds over 30,000, and it was nearly full. So that's the media's estimate, 22,000, and we all
multiply it by four. The speakers for the plenary events were Dr. Luis Palau, Dr. Ed Cole, Dr. Jack Hayford, Gary Smalley, former U.S. Senator Bill Armstrong, and Campus Crusade President Dr. Bill Bright. And one more, Dr. E.V. Hill, the inimitable black preacher from Southern California. I love that man. He can move a crowd as well as anybody I've ever heard or ever seen. And let's let people just hear the very end of his presentation, Mike. That must have been a stunning moment.
It was wonderful. The rain was coming down hard. It was about 9:30 at night. We had 22,000+ men there, and he shared a poem.
I have written a special poem for this occasion. I dedicate it to every one of you. Go on. Go on. Go on. Go on, go on, go on. Go on, go on, go on. Go on, go on, go on. The second verse. Go on. Go on. Go on.
It may have been cold and rainy that night, but E.B. Hill got us warmed up and really challenged
us. Man, I would have loved to have been there, Mike. Now, we're going to let people hear that entire speech by E.B. Hill probably in December. We're going to kind of spread these out a little bit. But today we're going to tune in on yet another speaker. I mentioned that Gary Smalley was there, and he had some great things to say and some great humor toward the end of this presentation, and I think our listeners are really going to enjoy this. He's written a new book published by Focus on the Family called The Hidden Value of a Man. It's by Gary Smalley and John Trent. The subtitle is The Incredible Impact of a Man on His Family. Right. And that was the general theme which he followed there in Boulder, Colorado, on July 25th, 1992.
There's a lot of material. We're going to spend 2 days with Gary Smalley, and let's get started.
When you think of your relationships, especially with your wife and kids, if you could have a relationship that was anywhere from zero, which is a rotten relationship, all the way up to 10, which is a great relationship, how many of you would like to have a relationship somewhere most of the time around 8, 9, or 10? See your hands. How many of you would like to have a relationship around 3 or 2, somewhere on there? I never get a guy to raise his hand for that. Most guys don't say to me, I can hardly wait to get married so I can have a 2 or 3 relationship and be miserable. Most guys want to be encouraged with their wife. They want to be mutually happy with their wife. And I want to talk about an area tonight that directly relates to having the kind of relationship that's somewhere up around 8, 9, or 10. And I don't know how you can have a relationship that's that high without some of the things that we're going to be talking about tonight. And so I've been excited about it. What I'd like to have us do is to imagine that as men, we carry 2 swords around with us every day. I'd like us to picture these swords as something that we use every day and they want to become knowledgeable about and skillful. I want us to become samurai swordsmen with these swords and be balanced with these swords. So as you see them and think about them, in fact, when I was originally thinking about doing this, I was toying with the idea of getting little gold swords and passing them out to all of you, and then as the registration got higher and higher, no way. But I would encourage you to get one, a little sword, keep it in your pocket. So every time you put your hand in your pocket, get a little sword in there. Make it a gold sword, and if you notice, you look at a cross, turn it sideways, and it looks a little like a sword. Because God is certainly, and Jesus Christ is certainly, the master of both of these swords, but especially the gold sword. I'm going to just explain them briefly and then get right into it. The silver sword is a sword that most guys get their identity from. It represents our job, our work, our vocation. Most guys spend a lot of time working on their knowledge and skills of their job, whatever you do. In fact, most of us get our identity from this to the place where when we meet each other as men, we say, what do you do? Well, I do whatever. And most of us would like to get better and better at this, not just to get compensated, not just to enjoy our job, which is very important to us as men, but so that we have that inner sense that what I do well. And that's one of the reasons why we as men spend so much time on our job and not so much maybe with our family, because we get so much satisfaction from using this. And do you know that the average man in America only lives 3 or 4 years after retirement? This is the average man, because they put down their silver sword, and a lot of us lose our identity. We don't know who we are. I've been told by enough men in their 60s and 70s and 80s to never put this sword down. So the rest of my life, as long as God gives me strength, I'm going to learn the knowledge and the skills of helping people build their relationships and be consistent with God's word and build that relationship in the foundation of Jesus Christ. That's going to be what I feel God's called me to do that. So that'll be my silver sword. So I'm going to just try to get better and better at it, so I can become that samurai swordsman. Well, it's a very important sword. I never want to belittle it at all in any way. I want you to buy as many books as you can in the bookstores about all the excellent ways you can use your sword. Get better and better so that those that you work for or your own employees look at you and say, what a great job that person does. That's important to do. Excellence. Everything we do for God should be done in honor. Excellently. But during our lifetime and as men, you and I need to get experts with knowledge and skills, just like we did with the silver sword, of our relational lives. This represents my knowledge and my skills of loving my wife and my kids and my friends. And I want to challenge us tonight as men to pick up this gold sword and become those samurai swordsmen of the gold sword. I want us to learn as much as we can. I want us to... It is not normal for a man to buy a book. We've heard that all... 80-90% of marriage books are purchased by women. And then they hand them to us and say, would you please read this? And we lay it down, or they put it under our pillow. We feel this hard thing under our pillow, or they put it in our path. We're not usually the ones thinking about marriage and relationships, because usually we're thinking about our silver sword. But I don't want us to be that way, and Promise Keepers doesn't want us to be that way. And our nation, we cannot afford any longer to be men basically of the silver sword. We have come to a place where we can't afford it. We have got to learn to be men of the gold sword. The gold sword involves loving our wife, learning how to do that. In fact, in a few moments, I'm going to give us briefly 7 reflections of the gold sword, so that we can take this type of thing home with us and see our wife's response when they see us using this in a better way, a more effective way. In fact, I've heard from many of you already who have come up and said you've called home, and some of your wives are already in shock. They can't believe the changes that are already taking place in your life, which is exciting, which is exactly what we want Promise Keepers to stand for, are changed lives in Jesus Christ that can be reflected to our wife and kids, seen by them. Now, you're going to go home, obviously, and try some of these things. You might get a strange reaction from her. She might feel your forehead or wonder how long this will last or whatever. It's like the man, the businessman, who had never done this before, but he had heard a challenging presentation about men picking up the gold sword and the importance of loving his wife. They even bought a marriage book about 6 guys and started meeting once a week at lunch, going over this marriage book about how they could improve their relationship. And they got to the section of the book on why a woman appreciates cards and flowers and a special gift on an unexpected time. And so he said to himself, I could do that. It says in this book, it really enriches and encourages women. I could do that. So he left work early that day. Never done this before. He bought a big bouquet of flowers. He bought a really neat romantic card, wrote a bunch of neat things in it, and a little gift. And he goes home, and he doesn't want her to see that he's at the door. He knocks on the door. She comes to the door, and he puts him out in front of him. He says, hi, honey. He says, I just want you to know how much I love you. And she breaks down and starts sobbing. And he thinks, wait a minute. I just read that this really encourages women. He says, what's wrong with you? She says, honey, everything's gone wrong today. She says, the baby's been grouchy and messy all day. She says, the dishwasher clogged up and flowed all over the carpet. And now you come home drunk. Now, unfortunately, one of the reasons that's funny in our culture is because a lot of times men are in suspect when we do something relational, right? See, the average guy can pick up Christmas and Valentine's Day because of all the signs all over town. But the anniversary, very few guys have a sign out in front of our yard saying 29 more shopping days until our anniversary. We usually have to be reminded. We need to be reminded by one another, obviously, but our wife will usually remind us for sure. Well, what I have discovered and you have seen and we are seeing all over our world, really reflected in our culture, is the lack of use of the gold sword by men. Now listen to some of the statistics of what happens when we men, now it involves all of us. The days are over when we can say, well, that's not my problem, that's somebody else's problem. It is our problem. My family is being affected by the mess our country is in. I'm being affected. You're being affected. We can no longer say to ourselves, well, I can work on that some one of these days in my family. No, we not only work on our own family, we got to help our brothers work on this. One of the themes of Promise Keepers is helping to hold your brother's arms up while he holds the gold sword, which is exactly what we need to be doing in every one of our communities. Just this week, in the International AIDS Conference, the Harvard professor who's chairman of that conference said, right in the headlines of USA Today, the number one problem with AIDS is men. And the fastest growing source in our society that's getting AIDS is women all over the world. And he says men decide when, where, and how primarily they're going to be involved. That problem is directly tied to men. And it's the lack of using this gold sword in their life. Take, speaking of someone thinking we're drunk, take drunk driving. Primarily a male problem. Take incest, almost 95% males. Take abortion. How many women force men to impregnate them? Do you know any? I've never met one. We're the ones that are getting them pregnant, and then where are we in this whole issue of abortion? Where are we hiding? Gordon Dalby in his book really brings this out, of how we as men are impregnating these women and then just running behind the bushes and hiding and saying, that's your problem now. The problems go on and on and on. They can be stretched out on and on and on. The area of drugs, the area of crime, 95% of serious crimes are committed by men. We mentioned child abuse, war. Look at the people who have started these wars. Men who have not known how to use this gold sword. What I'd like to see for us as men is to be challenged to pick this up and to help one another and start and begin to do what it takes to have a great relationship in our home and encourage our brothers everywhere to have a great relationship. And therefore, we are encouraging as Promise Keepers that you seriously consider, if you are not already in a small support group of just men or of just three or four couples, that's the ideal number. More than that, it gets more difficult. But if you're not in a support group, that can cause us to not have the energy at times or the memory to pick up this gold sword. So what I would like to say is that men are tremendously valuable in the life of women and children. What we say and do to them affects them for their entire life. You can ask Gary Oliver in his counseling center right here in Denver. The people who come to me in counseling, primarily it's because some man, in some way, either a grandfather or a great-grandfather, affected those children, which went on down generations, as we've heard all weekend, and it's affected us in some way. But when we pick this up as men and begin to use it on a regular basis, and I don't even have to tell you about the silver sword because you're already using that, most of you, or we want to. So what I'd like to talk about are seven reflections of this gold sword. I'm only going to mention three quickly, and then I'm going to highlight four of them. The first one I want to mention is, how do you handle your money? That's a tremendous reflection of the gold sword. Major conflicts in families, but there are excellent materials available today. Ron Blue, Larry Burkett's material. There's all kinds of help available through, even your local bank has a whole series of materials that can help us handle our finances. Now, one of the things that I see is needed in the church today and with men is a clear understanding of these seven reflections as they relate to Ephesians chapter 5. That's that section that says, that most men are familiar with if you've been in the Word at all, that it says, husbands, love your wife as Christ loves the church. It even says, wives, submit yourself to your husband as unto the Lord, for the husband is the head. You know, as a marriage and family speaker for the last 20, 25 years, I have never once taught submission. The words wouldn't come out of my mouth. Only this past year, for a few months, have I started to use that word, the S word I call it, because if you have women in the audience and you start talking about submission, you can see the color of their eyes changing right in front of you. They don't like that word because I believe, as you know it has, it's been really misused. It's been, the connotation is doormat, or the husband makes all the decisions and the wife is to be subservient and is an inferior. That's a total travesty of the definition of submission in the scripture. But I didn't know growing up. I mean, I heard those words. Didn't make sense to me. I used to tell my wife when we were first married for the first 5-10 years, you want to memorize some scripture? Let's memorize those sections that talk about the wife submitting to the husband. She never liked those sections, and it never did anything to her. You know when submission came? When we both understood it. And it's wonderful to understand that word and to understand the word headship. Now, let me just share for a few moments what I am coming to realize is the underlying meaning of those words right there in Ephesians 5 of submission and headship. This past year, a Greek and Hebrew scholar came to me because I hadn't teaching it. He said, how come you never teach that? I said, well, I really don't understand it that well, and I don't like teaching it because it does cause reaction. And so I don't understand it, so I can't give the illustrations or whatever else. So I'm not going to teach the truth unless I can see it in my own life or my wife's life or people I know. So he said, well, let me tell you what that word means. Both the word headship and submission are military words in the Greek. I said, okay, explain it. He said, basically what they mean is going into the battle where you have a clear plan of what you're going to do, and the word submission means I'm going to support that plan. He said, I like that. Let me give me some more understanding of that, because that makes more sense to me. Then I started realizing it's exactly what happened to us as men in our nation in Vietnam. I've gotten to know Ollie North a little bit this year and talking to him several times. And I asked Ollie just personally, what really went through your mind during Vietnam and how frustrating really was that experience? He said, every day we'd get up and get our orders and they had no sense and had no relationship to the day before. We didn't know why we were taking this hill or that group or those group of trees or this. And we always knew we were probably going to run into the enemy, which he did several times. And he said, it was so frustrating because the nation was against us. The people were picketing and rioting, and the Congress was against us. And we knew it, and the Viet Cong publicized that regularly, and the morale was so low, there was no way we were going to win that war. Drugs were rampant. But look at the contrast with Desert Storm. What's the contrast there? Here's sort of a picture of submission and headship, as I see it in Ephesians 5 with Desert Storm experience. Let's just imagine it this way somehow. Let's say that Bush and his advisors and everyone else said, look what's happening here. Saddam Hussein has invaded Kuwait, and we got a major problem here because he goes into Saudi Arabia and controls that, and then goes into Iran and controls that. He'll control a major block of the oil. He'll have so much power. What's he going to do to Israel and all the other places in the country? It'll be a major problem down the road. So let's say his advisors say to him, you better act now, and you better kick him out of Kuwait now. You better get hot on this. Let's just imagine that he went to God and prayed about it and said, God, what should I do about this? And he sensed that this is really what God would have him do. Let's just imagine that happens, okay? Now, this is the way that submission and headship would work. He goes to God and says, what do you think? And God says, yes, it's not my will for another nation to rape a nation like that. So kick him out. So what does Bush say? Aye, aye, sir. So he's going to the commander-in-chief, who's Jesus Christ, our commander. Then he goes to the Congress, which was a whole rare experience when you realize it, that they actually approved this. And then, right? That was a miracle in itself. Then he goes to General Powell, Joint Chief of Staff, and says, General Powell, as President and Commander-in-Chief of the military, I order you to kick Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait. Aye, sir. I will support that. He goes to Schwarzkopf and says, look, we're picking you as Commander-in-Chief of that thing. You go over there, you get organized, and you kick him out of Kuwait. Aye, sir. What's he do? He gets all the generals and all the officers. They get all their men together. What do? They strategize and get a very clearly devised plan. Then the day comes. He calls the order. The men all say, aye, aye, sir, because they know the plan. They go in there in a short time, probably one of the shortest wars in history, and they accomplish their objective. They got him out. Why was that so effective? Because it was so clearly planned, and everybody understood it in their divisions and so on. They knew what they were doing. They knew who the enemy was. It was clearly defined, and they did it. Now, that same thing is possible in our marriages and our families. What I see happening for the last 20, 30, 40 years in America and around the world is that we are having our Vietnam experience. We are not organized as men. We don't know how we're going to love our wife and kids. It's not clear to us. Somehow we lost it from our dad. Somehow it missed its mark. And so men like me, who were raised in a home where I never saw my dad basically use the gold sword. I saw him use the silver sword, and I saw him put this over the fireplace as an ornament, but never really use it with my mother and our other five brothers and sisters. I never got to see it. So when I finally married, I didn't know how to use this thing. And my wife was trying to explain it to me, and I thought she was just bugging me all the time. It never made sense to me, and I just wanted her off my case to relax, will you? And she never did relax, and still hasn't to this day. But the reason she doesn't want to relax is because she wants me to use the gold sword. She knows that I'm going to live longer. It's no wonder that the scripture says in Genesis 2:18, it's not good that man should dwell alone, that I have created a woman to be our completer, equal and important, but gives us something we can't do on our own. That's what the Hebrew word means. What she gives us, men, is an awareness of the gold sword in a unique, special way from God. She's a gift of God to help us develop the knowledge and skills of using this not only in her life, but in the lives of our kids. And if we were honest, a lot of us would raise our hands, and I'll be the first to raise our hands. How many of us would be honest enough to say we have frustrated our wife's attempts to help us use the gold sword? Look at the hands. The umbrellas are going up as well as the hands. I'm raising my hands, guys, because I frustrate my wife and did a lot more when I was younger. But I do it less today because I'm learning how to use this. Doesn't mean I remember it all the time, because she still can remind me. Last fall, I was speaking at Baylor University. We got up in the morning after I'd spoken, had a good, successful time with the students. We're in a motel. She's concerned about our son and his dating life. And I'm saying, relax, and he'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Well, she's concerned about it because she sees some potential problems down the road in his life with the gold sword. And so she's almost tearing up, still in bed. And I'm working around doing something. It's about 7 in the morning. And she starts saying, I'm really concerned. I said, would you relax on this? It's okay. He's going to be okay. She gets tears well up in her eyes, and this is what she says to me, guys. This is last fall. She says, when are you ever going to do what you teach? With tears in her eyes. I teach that? Yes, guys, I teach that. You know what I did? Instead of saying, well, get off my case, nobody's perfect, let me point out a few things you do. I didn't do that. That's silver sword stuff. Not gold sword. Doesn't get you very far, as you know. All I did was walk over next to her, put my arms around her, sat on the bed, put my arms around her, and said, you're really hurting, aren't you? And she said, I am. I said, if you were the weather right now, what kind of weather would you be? And she kind of described this weather right here. And I said, I really hurt you, didn't I? She said, yes, that hurt. She said, if you could just listen to me, how concerned I'm about this situation. And I listened to her. And I just held her for a while, and I said, if you were a flower, what would be happening to you? She says, well, all the petals have fallen on the ground, and you walked on them as you came over here. I said, well, I understand. I mean, that makes sense to me. See, all I was doing was using the gold sword. You don't have to say a word. Just go over there and do it. So these 7 reflections is a plan. When you get a plan, our newest book's called The Hidden Value of a Man. In there is a plan for you and your wife to write a family constitution with those 7 reflections. Because you can have 10 or 5, whichever ones you like. But the point is, you got to have a plan. Because if you don't have a plan, she can't submit. I've interviewed all these women since I've been teaching this, and I'm saying to women, hundreds of them, I'm saying, does it bother you if your husband sat down with you and said, let's get a plan, honey, that we can work on together that will really encourage and enrich our relationship, and together we'll go and all stand up in the family and say, charge! And would you support me in that? And she'd say, and they all say, yes. And that's exactly what my wife says. They will support us, men, when we have a plan. But if they don't understand the plan, how in the world can they do it? So, back to the seven reflections. We started with money, and then I remembered this other thing and had to come back to it. How are we doing our money? Second, this is real important. How much anger are you going to allow in your home because it's not consistent with the gold sword? Anger does more damage in our homes than any other single factor I know of in marriage and family and friendships. If you allow anger to last inside your wife or your heart or your kid's heart, what happens is about 30 negative things take place and they begin to dissolve your relationship. In my home, part of our family constitution is not to allow the sun to go down on our anger. That we made a commitment to one another with the gold sword to resolve our anger. Either I seek forgiveness or she does. Or our kids do. Somebody seeks the forgiveness. And just like our brother who shared with us earlier about prayer, push. Pray until something happens. I'd like to revise that and say, do something with your wife in a courageous way regarding anger until something happens. Follow her around if you have to in the house. Say, we've got to get this anger out of our heart. And I want to be the first one to find out what I've done to offend you so we can get this out. It's extremely important. Do you know, guys, that some of you are going to go home fired up about Promise Keepers? Some of you may even say, give me one of those gold swords, I'll take it home and use it with my wife. Not like this, but I mean tapping her, you know what I mean? Using it as a reflection and holding it up and say, this is the standard we want in our home. Some of your wives are going to knock this sword right out of your hand. They say, forget it. I know how phony you are. This whole thing's a fake. It won't last but a month. I mean, don't even bother with it because it will really discourage me to see you not carry through with this. So don't even tell me what you're going to do. Some of them are going to hide your gold sword after you start using it. You're going to say, honey, where's the gold sword? I saw it here yesterday. She won't tell you. You know why? They have too much anger in their heart. If your wife is an incest victim, if your wife was abused by an alcoholic father, if she was abused in any way as a child, chances are she won't let you use this with her because it's inconsistent with what she believes about herself. And until that is solved, one of the things that I love to say is that only the wise seek counsel. Seek correction, it says in Proverbs. If you don't have a Gary Oliver, I think it's Southwest Christian Counseling Center, something like that. If you don't have one of those counseling centers or like that in your community, find one or get together with about 100 or 200 men and hire one for your area. Because only godly men seek out counsel. And if your wife is struggling with that, and it's been year after year after year of struggling with it, there's a good little book called Victims Who Marry by Don Frank. And what a good book that is, just to help you see the problems with your wife who's really struggling with some past anger. But you can decide with her in your family constitution how much anger you're going to allow. And then third is understanding and recognizing the unique personality of each member of the family. Understanding how God has uniquely designed every member of your family. Know what your kids are. Know who they are. Know who your wife is. Know who you are. So that you really feel confident about the way God made you. You're going to need to balance for sure. You know that your basic God-given created personality pushed out of balance becomes your greatest weakness in relationships? If you don't know who you are, you could be causing all kinds of problems in your home and not even know it. That's part of that family constitution because there's a number of great sources in the country today that'll teach that. Well, those are the three I just wanted to highlight. I want to go in more in depth with these other four. Seven reflections. We had three. Now we're going to go into the rest of them. Number four. It's almost like this. One of the great reflections and one of the great values of a man and tremendous purpose of this gold sword is your mouth and your tongue is a reflection of this gold sword. Your mouth and your tongue. Now, I want you to touch your mouth. And if you want to touch your tongue, you know, if you want. I just want us to remember this as much as possible. the mouth and the tongue of a man is tremendously valuable and powerful. What you say to your wife and your kids affects them for their entire life. Those are the people we see in counseling because of what you and I have said or not said. One of the greatest needs of a woman and of a child is to hear from you on a regular basis, I love you. It gives them security. So one of the great reflections is use the mouth to give your wife and kids security. Give them unconditional commitment to love. Use your mouth on a regular basis to praise. Use it to encourage. I even have a plaque on my wall that says to Norma, Carrie, Greg, and Mike, in assurance of my lifetime commitment to you. Now, when I first started developing this material years ago, I was in small groups learning what strengthens and weakens families. We took as many dysfunctional, in a sense, couples that were really strained. We took as many as we could and got them in small groups and just asked the question, what strengthens you and what weakens you? And year after year after year after couple after couple after couple, small groups. Do you know that we never lost one of those couples to divorce? And several years later, we all got together for a reunion and said, look, we're all together. And we realized one of the powers of a small group is the support that you get when you have three or four other couples with you or men holding you accountable on a weekly basis. This year, I watched two precious young couples, both married about 15 years. I watched their marriage disintegrate. And I watched one couple had two other couples they were in a support group with. The other couple in another state didn't have anybody with them. They went to church now and then, but they didn't have any support system. They both strained out almost the same time. The one couple with no support system is divorcing right now and fighting over the kids. The father called the little 9-year-old boy and said, who do you want to live with? And you make your choice right now because you know you're daddy's boy and I want you with me. And he started weeping on the phone and said, I want to live with you, daddy, but I want to live with mommy. I want to live together. Do you know how much damage that does to a little boy? Right here in your town, Dr. Howard Markman says, the number one problem with children of divorce is they never were able to access their anger and deal with it. Are we powerful men or what? We ought to be supporting these couples that are strained out. Just grab them. We would say to these couples that were about to divorce, hey, we'll stay up with you all night if we have to. We took up an offering one time and flew the wife up to Denver to a retreat center just for her to have a rest and a time to just for counseling because we supported them. Plus, you get accountability. Now, several of the speakers, Ed Cole, Ken, number of the speakers, have small group programs that I hope that you've already looked at. If you're not in a small group, how many of you are in a small group now? How many of you are not in a small group now? Small support group. Look at that, almost the same number. Guys, I really encourage you to look. Don't try to do this stuff alone. One can cause 1,000 to flee, but two causes 10,000 to flee. There is power. The word said that where there's two or more gathered in my name, there am I in the midst. It's amazing power when two or three or four or five people are gathered in the name of Christ to strengthen the family. I remember this one night, this couple came to one of our meetings and we were just learning. I was the leader of the group, but I was just learning. And this one, he came and sat down, crossed his arms. He was hacked, you could tell it. And his wife came in a few seconds later, big red puffy eyes, and sat down on the couch across from him. And they didn't look at each other. As the leader of the group, I said, let's open in prayer. And then I thought, well, I might as well start with this guy and see how he's doing. So I said, let's call him Frank. I said, Frank, how you doing? He said, horrible. I said, well, how's your marriage? I mean, you want to talk about it? He says, yeah, I want to talk about it. I've been thinking about getting out of this marriage group, but I'm changing my mind. I want another one. Marriage. I can't stand living with that woman another day. This is in my living room with several other couples. I mean, tension broke out of my house. Just instantly, you could cut it with a gold sword, for sure. All right? Now, I was leader of the group, but here's what happened. All the women did the same thing instantly. They all glared at him and went to her to comfort her. All the men, we did the same thing instantly. We all looked at each other and thought, now what do we do? So as the leader of the group, I said, let's close in prayer. That's exactly what we did, guys, because there was so much tension, I didn't know how to solve it. So we talked the next day to this guy. I supported him. We talked for 3 hours in a cafeteria. Within 3 hours, he was in tears saying, no wonder my wife and I don't get along. because I don't know anything about the gold sword. And he started learning how to use this. They are together today. This is what, 12 years later? And they have two lovely children. Did he learn how to use the gold sword? Yes. Guys, if your marriage is strained out, don't try to do this alone. See, a counselor is a tiny support group, but still a support group, because it's two or more are gathered, there am I in your midst. Only the wise do that. Well, as I realize the power of our mouth, tell your wife on a regular basis, honey, I love you. You're secure with me. Say the same thing Jesus said to his church. Nothing will ever separate me from loving you. And watch how, you know, you have a lot of arguments around your house when she's not secure. The more secure she is, the fewer arguments you're going to see. That's our first thing, mouth and tongue. Second, that I want to really emphasize, but the fourth reflection or the fifth reflection of the gold sword is our mouth and our ears. So let's touch our mouth and our ears, okay? Our ears. What is that? That is meaningful communication. You cannot, it's impossible to have a relationship that's 8, 9, or 10 unless you have meaningful communication on a regular basis. You have to use your ears and your mouth regularly. The studies that I've done and the reports and the research that I've done, it says that if you want a relationship somewhere around 8, 9, or 10, you have to spend a minimum, and listen to how revolutionary this is in some of our lives, you have to spend a minimum of 60 minutes a day in meaningful communication with your mate. Now, before we lose all of you guys, that doesn't mean 60 minutes at one sitting. That means 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there, 15 minutes over there, 2 minutes on the phone. It means several phone calls. It means getting together at night. It means a number of things, and we'll talk about this really at the end of my presentation more. But meaningful communication is so important. And different kinds of meaningful. It's kind of like a meal. You give your wife a meal every day. Sometimes you're going to give her a McDonald's. Sometimes you're going to give her a really special steak dinner. Other times she's going to have a picnic. But meaningful communication is a variety of food. But if you don't give her the right kind of food, guys, she's not going to get the right kind of vitamins. And your relationship will develop scurvy. You cannot avoid meaningful conversation, whether you like it or not. You may say, well, I don't really like to talk. That's not my thing. Well, we said just with the leaders the other day, the average man speaks 12,000 words a day. The average woman speaks 25,000 words a day. If you're on a job where you speak your 12,000, when you get home during the day, you're done. And she's just warming up. And she'll say, honey, can we talk tonight? And you'll say, about what? Well, honey, I've talked all day. See, if you do that, you're denying her vitamin C, and she will develop scurvy, and you will not like the results. So we don't have any choice. We have got to give meaningful communication. And there's different kinds of communication, like soft communication and tender communication. They love tender communication. Is that my nature? No, it's not my nature. I don't like giving tender communication. I love to lecture. That's my nature. I love to say, listen, woman. That's what I'd like to say. Would you get off my case? What is this? What do you want anyway? That's what I'd like to say. Is that the gold sword? There goes my notes. I don't need them anyway because he's held up the time here. It's coming to a close. But is that what we want? No. We have to do what Jesus Christ wants to do. And the last verse of Ephesians 4 says, whatever you do, be kind and tenderhearted with one another. That's not our nature, but it's possible in the power of Christ to do it. One time I drove into my driveway, tired as can be on a Saturday afternoon. Drove in there to watch some TV. I was probably going to watch the Colorado football game on a Saturday afternoon. Could hardly wait to get there, right? They were probably playing Nebraska or something like that. I was pretty fired up. Those Nebraska people are here. Now, when I pulled into the driveway, there was my mini motorhome parked at an angle, and Norma had taken it to go to the store and forgot just instantaneously that the outside cab was, you know, wider than the inside, and she ran into the house and sheared off a big section of the roof, and it fell in the driveway. Now, when I saw that mess, that big hole in the motorhome, do you think soft, tender words came to my mind? Lectures came to my mind, like, how could you think of doing that? Where'd you get your driver's license? Sears? I mean, do you know how much money this is going to cost me? You know, that's what came to my mind. And so my little boy, Greg, who was about 10 or 11 years old at that time, I'm thinking to myself, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I'm going to see you any second. I'm trying to remember, what do you do in these situations? And Greg said, Dad, why don't you do what you teach? I thought, I could do that. That's a good idea. What I teach is that you get soft and tender. when your wife is hurting. And I knew she was hurting because most women hurt when they run into the house. Okay? So I got out of the car and I start walking towards this big puzzle, and she comes flying around the side of the house and she starts crying to me, and she says, "Look what I did, I wrecked the camper." And she said, "Look at the roof." And she said, "I told the neighbors across the street and they're watching to see how you're going to respond." Yeah. That's accountability. I did what my neighbor would have wanted me to do. I did a gold sword thing. It wasn't my nature. I asked God to remind me, even while I was sitting in the car, all I did, guys, was put my arms around her and tenderly say, "How you feeling?" That's all I said. You don't have to be a missile scientist to ask that question. But I was tender. I just held her. Now, you can be nonverbal. That's not gold sword stuff. I was just tender. I just held her for about 5 minutes. We just talked. I told her I loved her a lot more than camps and campers and roofs. And you know what? She was energized. She was strengthened. She was encouraged. And one of the guys from our church came over and pulled into the driveway with a ladder and stuff, because she had called several people around the town and he got word of it. We had that thing fixed in 2 hours. Now, in the past, I would have lectured her, got all upset. This time, rarely, I said, "Lord, thank you for reminding me to be tender." I just baptized. You will blow your wife away. She will faint on you the next time she's frustrated. See, a lot of times a woman will say, "I am so frustrated around this house. I have got to have help. Nobody ever comes to dinner on time. Nobody ever picks up anything." See, the average guy, "I got to have help." The average guy thinks he's hearing his wife say, "I need help." She's not asking for help. But oftentimes we'll say, "Yeah, well, it's a good thing you brought that up. You know what? If you could just get organized around here, you wouldn't be so frustrated." Are you still taking all those vitamins that we spent all that money for? Or worse yet, are you in the Word on a regular basis? See, that's my nature. That's your nature, to lecture. Let's don't do that, guys. When they're crying out, frustrated, losing energy, that time of the month or whatever it is, put your arms around them and just be tender. It strengthens them. So, where are we? I guess I do need these things. We just talked about mouth and ears. Now we're going to move along rapidly here. Yes, real fast. We're talking about our legs and our feet. Legs and feet is do things with your wife. That's another reflection. It's bonding. You will never really be your wife's best friend unless you do things on a regular basis with her and the kids. One of the great things that we did as a family is camp. Now, I've got a million stories I can tell you about camping. But that sometimes that's just a candlelight dinner. It's a weekend trip. It's somewhere in the wherever you live. It's doing things with your wife. Even if it's just picking out the carpet or redecorating a room. It's doing things with it, because always something will go wrong. And if after something goes wrong, then we're greater. The bonding is greater, because things that go wrong in our life with somebody else, difficulties, always bond us. Almost always, unless we're angry and we don't get over the anger. That was legs and feet. That was a quick one. I'm going to move rapidly to the last one because it's really important. The last one is our arms and hands. Let's touch our arms and our hands, okay? Because your hands do so much good to your wife and kids. I'm talking about hugging. I'm talking about the kissing. I'm talking about holding hands. I'm talking about just sitting next to her with your arm around her. I'm talking about the tremendous power that you have in your arms and your hands. And if you are not hugging your daughter on a regular basis, but provoking her to anger, you're shoving her quicker into a life of sexual freedom far sooner than she... I mean, you don't want her involved at all. But if you don't hug her, and if you're not touching her meaningfully, I'm not talking inappropriately, I'm talking meaningful hugs, and then keeping anger out of her heart, you are forcing her into the arms of another guy. It's a great reflection of the gold sword. Now, one of the things with the gold sword reflection of physical touch is that a woman's physical need is primarily what I've interviewed over 30 or 40,000 women all over the world. I've been told by these women that they've said to me, my major physical need is non-sexual. It's about 80% of her need is just to be touched and caressed. Think of that, guys. Almost all of her physical need is non-sexual. Rather, on the other hand, for men, especially if we have a lot of testosterone flowing through our body, we have a great need for sex. The greater the amount of testosterone flowing through your body, Some guys in their 40s and 50s start losing some of it. Some actually increase, and some never lose it until they're about 90 years old. Now, don't tell your wife that right away because it really discourages them. Because testosterone is the chemical flowing through our body that motivates us sexually. Now, women have testosterone in them, but it's far less than we have. Some of them have so little you can hardly see it. Others have more. And when they go through some of their chemical changes, they bite you if you even touch them, right? So they not only have any, but they don't want you touching them. So we're the ones frustrated a lot of times sexually. They are far more sexually responsive to us if certain things are present. Sexually, as men, we're like microwave ovens. Turned on, boom, just like that. And over in a hurry. They are more like crock pots sexually. They warm up to the sexual experience only if there's a great relationship. If your wife is not sexually responsive to you, I can guarantee you that you're not giving enough security, you're not giving enough conversation, you're not bonding up with her or doing things with her, because a woman responds to a man who is building a gold sword relationship. And I'm going to close with this story. I haven't seen the thing come up for zero yet. No zero. Good. I want to close with a story of what motivates a woman sexually. What I've heard from them. And watched it work. Norm Evans has two Super Bowl rings. He played for the Miami Dolphins. Ended his career with the Seattle Seahawks. Super person. I love him. His wife, Bobby. They went on Sonya Live with us in our book, Language of Love, because it's an emotional work. It's the male language where a woman can say anything she wants to you and you understand it instantly, but you can reverse it. You can say anything you want to her and she will, because emotional word pictures, this is an emotional word picture. See, we understand it as men. He was real frustrated with his wife and their sexual relationship. So I told him about emotional word pictures. He came home one night and he thought, I'm going to tell her emotional word picture to get her motivated to be more responsive to me. So he said, honey, I am really, and you know that death and sex are the two most difficult things for couples to discuss. Because more, boy, you can get fired up in a hot discussion in a hurry and cut that whole area off for days sometimes. So he comes home to his wife and says, I want to give you a word picture to explain this. He said, here's how I'm feeling. I feel like we're playing the cup game. There's three cups turned upside down on our dresser. One of them has a bean under it. And during the day, you shuffle the cups around. When I come home and I'm sexually motivated, you say, well, check the cups. So I go over to the dresser and I say, tonight's the night, yes. So I lift up the cup, ooh, and it never has the bean. And so I say to you, how come there's not three beans under those cups every night? And she said, you want to know why there's not three beans? She said, let me use a word picture on you. She said, I'm sexually like your favorite fishing pole, your deep sea fishing pole. He loves to fish in the ocean. She said, when we were first married, how far could you cast me sexually? He said, a long ways. She said, what's happened the last 15 years? She said, you never oiled the reel. You never changed the line. The end of the pole's broken off. She said, you want to know how far you can cast me now? A lot of backlashes, right? And he said, yeah, there are a lot of backlashes. He said, what would it take to have a brand new rod and reel? She said, aha. A brand new rod and reel. In fact, I'll tell you a current story that came right here. One of you men came up to me and told me this. You were on your way to the airport here, and you noticed that your gas tank was getting low. And you said to your wife, honey, I'm going to stop to get some gas. She said, no, you're going to be late for your break. She says, no, it's real important. I want to get gas because I don't want you getting gas down this area because it's kind of dangerous. She says, oh, honey, I can get gas down there. She says, no, it really be important to me to know that you're safe. And that I want you to know how much I love you, and I want to do this. Would you let me do this? I can do it in a hurry because I really feel uncomfortable about you doing that down here. She leaned, scooted over next to him, whispered in his ear, she says, that makes me really horny. See, that's protection. That's men. Now, listen to what she said to him. She said, do you want a brand new rod so that there's a new tip on it? And he said, yes, yes. When you come home at night, come and find me and put your arms around me and just hug me tenderly and ask me, how's your day been? Let's talk for just a few moments. She said, that's like a brand new rod. He said, yeah, brand new rod. Okay, what's a brand new reel? What's a new reel with some fresh oil in it? She said, if you would help the kids with their homework from time to time and just play with them. She said, you know that it turns me on when I see you playing with the kids? And he goes, what? It turns you on? Kids, get in here. I want to play with you right now. See, you have to ask your wife what turns her on. You're married to her. She doesn't have testosterone, so she's not going to get turned on like we do. We don't have to see our wife playing with the kids to get turned on. They don't have to be doing anything, as a matter of fact. They're just turned on all the time, right? That's testosterone, guys, mainly. So, those are the reflections of the gold sword. I believe that if you and I seriously pick them up and are serious about learning how to do it, and bond in with three or four of the guys or couples and say, let's learn together how to develop our own family constitution and live that out, I believe that we will see a revolution in our country, because when the family gets stronger, our nation gets stronger. And God is glorified when the family is strong.
And that is the bottom line, glorifying God in all that we do, especially in our relationship with our family. That was Gary Smalley, and we've been featuring for the past couple of days his presentation at the Promise Keepers Gathering this past July up in Boulder, Colorado.
That was good stuff, wasn't it, Mike? We pushed the envelope a ways there.
We're going to get a few letters about that humor there toward the end.
And I think we're also going to get a lot of letters from people who recognize the wisdom of what he was talking about.
Yes.
Because, you know, in my experience, Mike, people who have sexual problems and they go to a therapist and they try to work them out, frequently they're talked to about the mechanics of sex and positions of sex and, you know, the anatomy of sex and so on. The truth of the matter is, what makes a sex life meaningful is what happens in the rest of the 23 and a half hours in your day. It's the relationship. It's how you interact together as husband and wife. It's the romantic component to the relationship that makes the physical side of marriage meaningful.
With that, we've come to the end of this Focus on the Family cassette. We hope that what you've heard has given you further insight into ways men can strengthen the relationships they have with their families and friends. We'd like to offer you a copy of Gary Smalley and John Trent's latest book entitled The Hidden Value of a Man. In it, they share how a man's influence affects the people in his life, and they offer steps for strengthening those relationships. If you'd be interested in receiving a copy of The Hidden Value of a Man, simply write to us for more information. Here's our address. It's Focus on the Family, Colorado Springs, Colorado, 80995. Or in Canada, Box 9800, Vancouver, BC, V6B 4G3. And thank you for listening.